Welcome to the Beyond Barriers podcast. When women lead, share performance and profits go up 50%. Results are more powerful when everyone is empowered. This is the insight that brought the four founders of Beyond Barriers together. We came from a diverse setup and leadership backgrounds with a common goal: to close the gender gap at work and expand economic opportunities for everyone. Tune in each week as one of us interviews inspiring guests who share stories and cutting-edge strategies that will help you learn what helped them go further faster.
There is such a potential to be trapped in feelings of resentment and feelings of self-doubt, because often we have this vision for ourselves, but the reality is we always don't achieve that exact vision. In fact, I would suggest that that is something that doesn't happen very often, that we have this vision for us as younger professionals. And for me, it was really important to reframe my thinking, because along the beginning part of the journey, Nikki, I had this failure complex, if you will, that what I aspired to do, I didn't succeed at. And that wasn't the real story that I needed to tell. And when sometimes we feel that we failed at something, we put on this label of, I am a failure. And that's not the story. Out of failing initiatives, activities, goals, whatever that means, it's a learning opportunity. For me, it was really about reframing and looking at myself as a learner, that I had opportunities to grow.
Hi, I'm your host, Nikki Barua. In today's episode, we're venturing into the world of someone whose story reads like a masterclass in resilience, ambition, and the art of leadership. Our guest, Kira Kimball, who's the Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer at Marsh McLennan Agency, has charted a path that's both inspiring and instructive. Kira's journey proves that achieving one's dream is as much about the mindset we adopt as it is about the actions we take. Kira opens up about the essence of staying fluid in the face of life's inevitable changes, transforming every setback into a stepping stone towards growth. As we navigate the complexities of leadership, Kira reminds us that at the heart of effective leadership is the courage to be true to oneself. So if you're looking for that spark to ignite your own journey, or if you're in search of wisdom that comes from real life experience, you don't want to miss this episode. Visit GoBeyondBarriers.com where you'll find show notes and links to all the resources in this episode, including the best way to get in touch with Kira. Our conversation with Kira Kimball begins now.
Hi, Kira. I'm so thrilled to welcome you to the Beyond Barriers podcast. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Nikki. I'm excited to be here today.
Well, I've been following you on LinkedIn and been so inspired by your initiatives, both within your organization, but also in general. You were involved in several nonprofits, a lot of diversity initiatives. You're a huge advocate for empowering women, something that is very much aligned to the Beyond Barriers mission. So I'm excited for us to really learn more about you, your career journey, and the strategies that helped you achieve your ambitions, and you know, things that our audience can apply in their own lives. So let's just dive right in.
Sounds great.
Let's start by, you know, really at the very top. Tell us a little bit about your story and what you learned in your journey.
Well, I think the biggest thing that I've learned throughout my career journey is really being open to possibilities. When I started in undergrad, I was majoring in English, minoring in philosophy. And when I went to graduate school, I was going to be an English professor. That's really what I looked for myself. But I decided after some classes and learning that I didn't want to be in the ivory tower, that I wanted to have the opportunity for impact. So I changed my graduate program degree to counseling and human development, and had the great opportunity to work in higher education for 10 years. And that's really where I began a lot of my diversity, equity, and inclusion work, which way back then, that's not what we called it. I had a good opportunity to create programming, leadership, mentoring initiatives for a lot of underrepresented students. And that was the journey, Nikki, I thought I was on, that I was going to be in higher education. And then I found out in my early 30s that my life took an incredibly unexpected turn, as it often does in our lives. And I moved back home with my parents here in South Dakota and really found that a pathway to higher education probably wasn't going to be instantly in my cards. And I needed a job. And so part of this journey was my sister, who was a CFO at a health plan at the time, saying to me, Kira, my admin is going to be out for 3 months on maternity leave. Why don't you come be my admin? And I promise you, you're going to meet somebody who's going to hire you. So I had a lot of skeptical thoughts about that and really thought, I'm going to go work for my little sister. I'm not so sure about that. So some of my journey and my learning is the value of humility and really being open to possibilities. So I went and worked for my sister for 3 months. Nikki, she was right that I had the opportunity to get to know people. I was offered a position at the health plan. Again, education, health insurance, very different, but I had eyes wide open, recognizing maybe there's something here. And 16 years later, an amazing career I've had in insurance. And if you would have asked me that, my younger self, I would have not believed it. And so I think a big part of that is my learning to just be open to the adventure of having a career and not having this expectation that it's a straightforward trajectory and that we always have something to learn. So I've been in the insurance industry. I've never sold a piece of insurance. I've always really worked with clients and now within our organization on creating a better culture that's more inclusive and equitable for all.
Wow. I love that story because it really highlights that often a setback can really be the setup for a comeback. And your career path has clearly demonstrated that even though you started off in academia and a setback leads you to somewhere else and having the humility to take, you know, the opportunity in front of you. And now here you are as a senior executive in a major organization. So it doesn't matter where you start. It doesn't matter what holds you back in the middle. There's always a path if you stay open, humble, and curious. What did you find that helped you gain that clarity on not just sort of, you know, and whether it was academia or then switching into health and insurance, how did you know what your strengths were? Or, you know, did it just unfold naturally? What were sort of the clues along the way that helped you believe in what you were meant to do?
I think that is such an important question. And the focus on our strengths in our careers is really critical. And when I was moving from higher ed to the insurance industry, I really needed to seek out that clarity because I was using skills in higher education that when I started in the insurance industry, Nikki, I had no idea they were transferable. So I think that it's important we do have that setback or a surprise curve where moving or a life circumstance changes that trajectory to really focus on what are my gifts? What are my talents? Because my experience well into my 50s, that so many gifts and talents that we have can be transferable to different industries and to different roles. So I really need to pay attention to what my gifts were. And then the other piece of this that I found so important is what are the gifts I like to use? What are my strengths that bring me joy? I could be really great at building spreadsheets, but if I don't have joy around it, like my sister does, it's not a good match for me. I'm not going to thrive in my career. So that's a piece of wisdom that I have learned is know what your strengths are, and then identify the ones that are really fun and bring you a lot of happiness and motivation that you can bring to the success of your organization or your entrepreneurial effort, whatever that might be for you and your career. And then while doing that, also getting clear on what my workplace values are. When I was in education, I knew I wanted to have purpose and inspire students. I wasn't sure what that meant for me in insurance. It took me some time to develop what's my purpose in this place. And really getting laser focused on what's important to me helped me identify what the impact I want to work towards in my organization, which was definitely a journey. I didn't get there overnight. I had things that I needed to accomplish and explore and learn, but being focused and remembering my North Star really helped along that journey.
Thanks for breaking that down in that systematic way. So for those folks that are listening, you know, what Kira shared is really one, identify what you excel at, what your strengths are. But just because you excel doesn't mean that it sparks joy. So make sure that you choose the things that you excel at that also spark joy. And then when you know that, put it from the lens of the organization that you're at and your endeavors to figure out what is your unique value proposition that combines your strengths, your passions, and your contribution. And when you have that, that is where you're truly in alignment to then achieve massive success over time. When you think about, you know, each of these transition points, you've, you know, also encountered sort of, you know, switching lanes, if you will, right? And often when people either on their own or are forced to switch lanes, encounter a level of self-doubt or fear and discomfort, because you're going from what's familiar, what's certain, and what you're confident about to this great unknown where there's gray areas and you don't know what's going to come out of that. You've done that multiple times.
Right.
What helped you sort of build that confidence and resiliency to switch lanes?
There is such a potential to be trapped in feelings of resentment and feelings of self-doubt, because often we have this vision for ourselves, but the reality is we always don't achieve that exact vision. In fact, I would suggest that that is something that doesn't happen very often, that we have this vision for us as younger professionals. And for me, it was really important to reframe my thinking. Because along the beginning part of the journey, Nikki, I had this failure complex, if you will, that what I aspired to do, I didn't succeed at. And that wasn't the real story that I needed to tell. And when sometimes we feel that we failed at something, we put on this label of, I am a failure. And that's not the story. Out of failing initiatives, activities, goals, whatever that means, it's a learning opportunity. For me, it was really about reframing and looking at myself as a learner, that I had opportunities to grow and develop. It also helped me reframe that there are possibilities and that my career trajectory, I want to look at it as more of an adventure, as a roller coaster. If you're someone who likes roller coasters, I do. So that is something fun, exhilarating, surprising. So a lot of this for your viewers is really getting into your self-talk and those limiting beliefs and saying, you don't belong here, at least not for long. Sometimes we have to be present to our feelings in order to advance, but don't sit with them. So I really wanted to look at possibilities, saying that what seemed like I was the failure was just an opportunity to pivot and try on a new adventure. So self-talk for me and reimagining possibility has been really critical throughout all of the decades that I've been in the world of work.
It's incredible how reframing is such a powerful tool, right? Like where something can either be a limiting belief and a fear, or it can be reframed as an adventure, you know, full of twists and turns that you have fun at. And, you know, we often find that simply being able to, you know, reframe things as either being about success and failure, make it about you're either succeeding or you're learning. There is no failure,
right?
What about, you know, along the way, you also took certain risks, and they might have been professional risks, they might have been sort of personal risks, including relocation, switching industries, and things like that. Is there a certain framework or approach that has helped you throughout your career make difficult decisions or step into that risk but still have a level of conviction that no matter what the outcome is, that it's still an action that you can take? And the reason I'm asking this is that what we find through our work with professionals worldwide is one of the things that really stalls careers is inertia. It's not necessarily that there's lack of opportunity, but the fear of stepping into something that feels risky or a decision that people are uncomfortable with, the baseline action ends up being do nothing.
Yes.
But when you do nothing, you also stop moving. And so share a story or a strategy that has worked for you, you know, in terms of always moving forward and avoiding inertia.
I think for me, the biggest strategy is raising my hand. Mm-hmm. That in and of itself to say, let me try that. Let me take that on. I want to learn more. Because there's this moment that you're sitting in your chair or you're in your office or you're on the plant floor and you're saying, do I raise my hand? Do I say yes? And then when you do, and someone picks you and says, yes, Kira, you're going to lead this initiative or your effort, you're out of the box. Like, it's like for real now. And that does feel risky, the moment before and the moment after. But that's how I really landed this role at Marsh McLennan Agency, to be just completely honest. I remember my local leader here in South Dakota was talking about this initiative, and he was looking for some help to start this from a grassroots effort to elevate it nationally across the firm. And I remember running up to him, excited and nervous both at once, and said, if you need help, I'm here. And he said, I need help. I'm taking it. And that was exhilarating and like, oh my goodness, what did I just do? both. And so I think for us in our career development, recognizing something can feel really risky at the same time that it feels exhilarating, and that we can't do an either or. Oftentimes things are so complex that we just have to look at it as a both and. So me raising my hand, which sometimes is adding to, you know, doing something at the side of the desk outside of my normal workday type of opportunity, but sometimes those extra efforts that we put in create a pathway that would not have happened had we had not raised our hand and took that risk and say, I'll take that on.
Yeah. Sounds like jumping out of the airplane, right? If you overthink, you're never going to do it.
Right.
So at some point, you just got to, you know, be open to opportunity and step right in there. And, you know, the best way to overcome inertia is just take some action.
Yes.
Well, you also alluded to, you know, excitement and the anxiety, the trepidation before you do something. And I came across some research that was really fascinating about how, you know, our physical reaction in our bodies to anxiety and excitement is identical. It's the meaning we attach where anxiety feels like a negative emotion, excitement feels like a positive one. But, you know, we're really, it's the exact same thing. So reframing again, you know, instead of feeling anxious about, oh, hey, I'm signing up for something new versus the excitement of, wow, this could open up new possibilities. And your strategy has proven that simply stepping into new opportunities can open up massive doors.
I love that you said that. And I just have to land on it for a bit because that research is so true. I mean, I feel that in my body. And sometimes when I need to stop and kind of assess, all right, what's going on with me? Am I anxious or excited? And you're absolutely right about those same kind of biomarkers that happen. And if we can just label, I'm excited and choose that, that's really empowering, at least in my journey.
Yeah, it absolutely. I mean, I use that as a cue to say, if I'm feeling that, how do I, you know, label it and frame it as excitement? Because that leads to action as opposed to inertia. Mm-hmm. So on that topic, since we're talking about rituals and habits, what are, you know, some of your daily habits or, you know, rituals that you find have been key to your professional success, but also thriving personally?
I think for me, over the past several years, our culture and around the world as well has been filled with busy. So many to-dos and so much check the to-do list off and productivity. And I found myself kind of getting caught up in that, Nikki. And part of what I have tried to do, which I found is a form of self-care, is that I get up early and I go be by myself, typically at a coffee shop somewhere in town between 6:30 and 7 for a good strong hour. to often think, maybe do some writing, maybe read some interesting article. But I do that to have intentional time with myself, because I think that's something that we often miss. And for women identifying as caretakers, whether it's children or parents, we are giving so much of ourselves to others. And for me, it's been really helpful for my self-care to have some intention of being by myself. And that's what I do in the morning, in a quiet, really peaceful kind of place. I think gratitude has been something that I practiced for years. And I know when I got really purposeful about identifying things that are happening in my life, conversations, people, opportunity, and really naming it with a heart of thankfulness and gratitude, it has allowed me to experience harder things, challenging things. And the work I do as a DE&I leader, I find myself in that space often, but it helps me experience it with more ease because of that gratitude that I have with perspective. And then my final thing is sweating. There is nothing like a good exercise. I like to ride my bike on my trainer downstairs to get my yayas out, if you will. So those are three things that I'm going to be doing most days of the week, and it helps me both personally and professionally.
Thank you for sharing that. I want to dig a little bit into what you alluded in terms of, you know, making time for yourself. One of the concerns that we often hear from moms in our community, particularly, is that sounds lovely, but I've got three-year-olds that are demanding attention and I'm barely getting enough sleep and I can barely keep up with work and life and chores and all of that. How am I possibly supposed to find time for myself? And it you know, what advice would you give to someone in that situation and creative ways in which they could still figure out a form of self-care? Because often when I hear about that, to me, it's just a recipe for burnout. You know, when you keep piling those plates high,
what if you knew exactly where to focus to go further faster? Imagine having clarity on your strengths and barriers and the ability to take action and gain unstoppable momentum to deliver results in advance. Take the Beyond Barriers Momentum Metric quiz to get a personalized report on the 5 C's, core categories used to measure and accelerate success. Visit gobeyondbarriers.com/quiz to get your report today.
You tell yourself that there's just no option for self-care. It's just a matter of time before those burdens compound and you experience burnout, either from overwhelmed at work or, you know, struggling at home. What has worked for you, or what have you seen work for others?
When I think of women who have children and definitely honor the complexities of being a working parent, that is a real challenge to be that caregiver. And I think so many women put so much pressure on themselves to excel at parenting at such a high level, which I respect and admire. My argument is that if we don't slow down for ourselves, that we can't show up in the best way for those with whom we are in relationship that we have to care for. So I think if we operate under that premise that I got to care for myself or I'm not going to be my best self for others, and even if it is 15, 20 minutes, a handful of days a week, that can give you some respite to just be with yourself. But I also think that as women, at least I have found, and certainly in studies as well, we value friendships with other women. And that is really important to us. And having our own group of women to maybe say, can you take the kids for an hour during March? Can you take them for an hour during March? And then really kind of share in that. So our friendship group can provide some support. Mm-hmm. So we can take that time off, whatever, having lunch with ourselves, going to a movie by myself. For me, I like coffee by myself. but really be in relationship with other women, because that's important. That's been important to me. And as women in a very competitive society that is still very male dominated in the world of work, we've got to support and be allies for one another. And that's not just in the workplace. That's also being allies to help us be our best selves. And again, it could be an exercise group. I don't know what it is, a wine club, a book club, whatever it might be for you. But yeah, supporting each other to create that space is a beautiful thing, to be doing life in community with other women.
Yeah, it's such a practical recommendation that is accessible to everyone, no matter where you live, no matter what you do. This is something that anyone can access. And it reminds me of advice that I got from a mentor early in my career, who's a very, very successful female executive and had a wonderful family life. And one of the things she told me, and I was in my 20s at that time, and you know, she knew that I was very ambitious. And she said, you know, don't feel guilty about outsourcing or delegating personal responsibility. Get all the help you can, whether you need to pay for it or ask for it. And secondly, don't try to be perfect in every aspect of your life. Know where you are willing to be mediocre or even failing, but know which one matters more, because you can have it all. You just can't have it all at the same time. And it's been really, you know, wise counsel that has helped me through many, many personal and professional responsibilities that coincide at the same time. So your idea of leaning on community and leaning on all the help you can, don't have to be a soloist going through all of this alone. When, as we talk about community, you know, again, a similar pattern that we see is women are terrific at building community, building terrific relationships and being there for our circles, but not so good at asking for help. We're givers, but we struggle to be takers. And that could be personal or professional, right? And it's, you see that often nuanced in the workplace as well. You know, there's an interesting study that showed that when women step into new roles, whether it's a promotion or a new job, the first thing they think is, how do I get this done? How do I excel at this responsibility? When men step into a similar situation, they ask, who can help me excel at this? Who can help me get this done? And the difference shows how we put the burden on ourselves versus lean on mentors, sponsors, peers, experts who can help us. And it shows up very similarly, as you described, even in our personal lives. What strategies have worked for you in building, you know, powerful strategic relationships that have benefited you in your career as well as personal?
This is a hard one. This is one that I work on, Nikki. You know, you're talking a lot about self-advocacy behaviors, asking for what you want and what you need. And in fact, I probably mentor a handful of women and I'm pretty good at telling them, develop your self-advocacy. Let's practice what asking for what you want means. And then I always say to them, and I need to do the exact same thing. Because I do feel that as a woman, that oftentimes I might have to prove myself double the way over, and taking on those responsibilities and some of my self-talk is how I prove that. When in reality, if I can be more strategic, to use your word, more integrated and collaborative, I can probably maximize my impact and my effect better. So I am someone who continues to be on that journey, but trying to practice more from my mentors, from my sponsors, supervisors, to not be afraid to say, here's what's working well, but here's what I could use your help with, or here's what I could really benefit from to even help me have a greater impact. And I think when we situate it in that type of frame, it's easier for me to say, I'm going to do better for the workplace if you might create some ease in my effort, help remove this barrier, create this efficiency, open a door to a person who has power and privilege that I can benefit having a relationship from. And for me, it's all about practice. It's all about honoring. I'm not going to be perfect at always asking for what I need or for what I want. but I can practice that behavior. And sometimes I'm really authentic and about it. And I say, I'm a little uncomfortable saying that I could really use this, but I want to let you know that I think we have a trusting relationship. So I'm going to be honest with you. So I show up fairly vulnerable most days because it has served me well. But I do think as women, we need to give ourselves permission to ask for what we want, ask for what we need, and not have apology. And I'm coaching myself when I say that.
Yeah. But to your point, it's so much about practice, because this is, whether it's conditioning or, you know, something that we're not often used to doing, it's only practice that'll get us comfortable with doing that. Do you find that when you're really vulnerable and expressing your discomfort and asking for help, that it leads to more authentic relationships, that even at work?
Yes, it does. And, you know, since stepping into this role a couple of years ago, I committed, you know, I was going to be vulnerable and authentic, because I'm asking leaders to be vulnerable and authentic. And I have found it is the best way to build relationship quickly and to build trust in such a beautiful way. And so it is something that I just continue to use and encourage others to use, because it builds that relationship and credibility.
So Kira, I want to ask a question regarding your role. So in leading DEI, there's been a marked shift in the general sentiment, if you will, from where things were 2-3 years ago, where there was massive support for an equitable workplace and for DEI efforts. Many organizations at the time were racing to appoint chief diversity officers and invest in DEI efforts. And unfortunately, in the past year or so, we've seen the opposite happen. There's been pushback. There's been a much more tenuous environment and budget cutbacks, as well as not enough support and questioning the merit of this. Given your role, how's that impacted you? How's that impacted your initiatives? And more importantly, for you as a person, you know, what has been your mindset and approach in navigating through this?
At Mercer Clinton Agency, we started our DE&I journey before 2020, before George Floyd, before COVID-19. And we were really laser focused, Nikki, on our purpose, our why, that we wanted to create a culture where our colleagues felt safe to be their whole authentic selves, and that we wanted to create a culture where underrepresented colleagues could rise to all levels within the organization. So we really understood what our journey was about. And I think that is what has helped us sustain and keep that momentum. Some organizations who were quick to respond to the challenges that happened around George Floyd's murder and COVID-19 and social unrest that happened, they really stood up quickly and maybe didn't have opportunities to reflect on that why and that purpose. So for us, that has been really critical to keep going, because we know what we're about and the purpose behind the work that I lead, and so many people within our organization join me in that effort. So that has really helped, because right now, unfortunately, DE&I has really become politicized in society. And DE&I, diversity, equity, and inclusion, has never been about politics. It's always been about people. And, you know, that is the reality. That is the refrain that we have within my organization, that I have as a leader, and that we just really want to keep our eyes on that. We know that it's not only the right thing to do, but Nikki, you know the research. The research says, from a business perspective, that it is also valuable. So however an organization chooses to commit, we see the both and value of doing this work. And that's really where we focus on this. We are not, you know, this is not a sprint. This is a marathon. So the work that I lead, I try to keep that in mind in terms of making authentic steps forward as opposed to just checking the boxes, because that's not going to stay. And so for us, we really want to make a difference within the organization that we all come to work for every day, to make sure all 10,000 colleagues really can be who they are. They feel valued for who they are, and they know that they add to our value proposition to our clients and the communities that we serve.
That's so inspiring to hear. And thank you for leading with such courage and conviction. And, you know, I'm sure that also impacts folks that are looking to join your organization to feel that it is an inclusive environment. And we truly believe that inclusion and diversity is the source and the fuel for innovation. You cannot innovate without having different perspectives. And that can only come from people that have varied experiences and backgrounds. And it's a competitive advantage. And instead of being a box to check or just paying lip service, there is true business opportunity in this. And leading organizations will always stay committed to that. So I'm thrilled that, you know, you are one of those bold leaders that is not affected by which way the winds are blowing. I want to switch to our lightning round.
All right.
So our audience can get to know you better personally. So are you ready?
I am.
All right. So I'm going to ask you 5 questions and would love to know your responses. The first one is, what book has greatly influenced you?
As of recent, the last couple of years, Braving the Wilderness by Brené Brown has been incredibly influential for myself as a DE&I leader. And the concept of the book is really the idea of belonging fully to oneself, and that I know who I am, I know what I'm about, I know the impact that I want to have, and that in those values, I'm not afraid to stand alone in that wilderness. And that has been a really valuable and empowering book for me.
It's beautiful. Next question. What is your favorite inspiring quote?
I probably don't have a favorite quote, but you're going to hear me say time and again, sometimes we have to be our own superhero. Sometimes I have to put on the cape, you've got to put on the cape, and we've got to get it done. And so that's some encouragement I say to myself, some permission I say to myself, and to say to your listeners.
Love it. What is one word or a moniker that you would use to describe yourself?
I think we've talked about it throughout our time today, is authentic. That is a word that many of my friends and colleagues give to me often, and I will take it every day of the week. I know that when I am my real self, I am my best self, and build relationships in deeper ways, create strategy that others can really buy into because I'm showing up as me.
Isn't that the heart and soul of DEI, really? Creating an environment where people could show up authentically and give their best. What is one change that you implemented that made your life better?
It's the gratitude. It is totally the gratitude. There was a time where I felt a great deal of resentment, a great deal of, I have nothing left. And once I shifted my thinking to find that space of gratitude and thankfulness, it's made all the difference. And it is a daily practice that I have.
All right. The last question. What power song would you want playing as you walk out onto the stage?
I actually have had this experience before. I was a keynote speaker at an event. The event organizers asked this, and I picked Eye on It by Toby Mac. And it was such an inspiring song. I felt like I was floating onto the stage. It's just the energy that it gave me. If I had another song, it would be Lust for Life by Iggy Pop. Lots of energy with that tune, and just really ramping up. And that sounds like a great walk-on song.
Thank you for sharing that. So we have a playlist with all of the favorite songs from our podcast guests. So we'll be sure to add yours to that so our listeners can enjoy all of the energy and enthusiasm and the upbeat, you know, energy for achieving their dreams. But this has been so wonderful, Kira. Thank you for sharing your career journey and the strategies that have worked for you, but also the practices and habits that you employ on a daily basis that help you even now. And we know that all of our listeners, our audience, will be able to apply this and continue to chase their North Star because of leaders like yourself that share their wisdom. So thank you for joining us on the show. It's been an absolute delight.
Thank you so much for sharing my story and giving me an opportunity to hopefully inspire. I appreciate it so much, Nikki.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Beyond Barriers podcast. There are thousands of podcasts out there, and we are so grateful that you've chosen to listen to ours. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating and tell a friend, or share what you've learned on LinkedIn and tag us. We love hearing from our audience. Visit us at gobeyondbarriers.com, where you can subscribe and find show notes, links, and the best way to connect with our guests.